also good.
All right, let's get this started. Hey, everybody. This is Jeremy Miller, Commercial Director for Smart Home Solutions here at GE Appliances again, and we're continuing our transformation podcast, and I have my colleague, John Youssef, someone who I've worked with quite a while and obviously respect quite a bit. John, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Jeremy. So my name is John Youssef. I'm the technology leader for Smart Home Solutions, which is our IoT or smart appliance platform group. Then I also have the embedded software team and a small team where we do service analytics or diagnostics tools that we give to our service technicians and other third-party groups that will repair or service our appliances. And really, the reason the team is structured the way it is the embedded team, utilizing all the sensors that we have, starts to collect that data, and then it gets sent out to the service team and to the cloud, right, in order to do kind of these high-level features for the consumer based on the data that's generated from their machines.
One of the things that I wanted to focus on for this discussion was this notion of transformation. It's a word that gets used a lot. Maybe for some it's lost meaning because it gets used so much. But, you know, what does transformation mean and how do you actually look at it as a concept?
Yeah, I think now, right, the big focus is on what we call digital transformation, right? So if you break that down into its core, right, digital, you know, ones and zeros, the coding, but it's really how we're enabling technology to solve problems for the consumer, you know, and then transformation just means it's a big change, right? When, you know, when I first heard about the term digital transformation, you know, they said that the concept of the term transformation or transformational was really around the Industrial Revolution, right? So that just tells you how big the change can be, right? If you think about what the speaker said was, think about how different a grandparent's life was compared to the grandchild's life during the Industrial Revolution, right? So you're probably a farmer, you know, your dad was a farmer, your grandfather was a farmer, but now your kid and obviously your grandchildren are doing something totally different. They're working in a factory, they're working in the city, right? So the grandfather didn't recognize the grandchild's life. And I think as we go through this digital transformation, that's what we're seeing here again. I mean, just the speed of how things have changed. You know, you look at the last 10 years, all the new devices in the home, you got a smart TV, smart appliances, you've got cars that, you know, are driving themselves, right? So the life of my dad is very different than the life of my son, and it's continuously changing.
You know, so far you're the first person that's actually brought up kind of a really interesting historical analogy, right? The Industrial Revolution. And there's two things in there that I think you kind of talked about, or at least one's a word and one is how you describe the paradigm. First is that, you know, there was this total disruption, right? The second thing, you know, is the fact that the word revolution is used in the term. And in our minds, at least it feels like the mental model is this happened overnight. You know, the Industrial Revolution must have been like this breakneck thing that all of a sudden factories just came out of nowhere, and transformation is not that way. Transformation can happen incrementally in a way, right? You don't notice things happening around you. Do you think that that's kind of what transformation is, or do you think it's something different? Do you really think it is kind of like this urgent moment where there's a big shift?
No, first of all, when you talk about the industrial transformation or the industrial revolution, that wasn't overnight, right? That was over hundreds of years, right? 100 years, let's say, right? So it was slow. So it really, in my mind, it's slow. It's incremental change unless you get behind the curve. Then it's an impactful change, right? It's, you know, you think of examples of companies that have been disrupted, right? Like the taxi driver. Being in that space in maybe in San Francisco, this change, right, it was sudden. All of a sudden they wake up and, you know, they're out of jobs, they're being challenged. But elsewhere, you know, taxi drivers can see it coming, right? Oh, there's this new thing about how we can get, you know, car rides that are not taxi rides, right, through Uber and Lyft. But you see it coming towards you, right? And then you can make change, right? How does your company change as you see this transformation or this wave coming at you? So, you know, when I look at the appliance business, I think of it as the same way, right? We see company after company being disrupted. by a new startup or some other company within that space that becomes more digital and disrupts that space. But you can see it coming, right? It doesn't I don't need an appliance example to say it's coming, right? I can feel it. So we have to be prepared and make that change. You know, and that change, I would say for us, the change has been, you know, since 2006, right? In 2006, we started our first real connected appliance, right? It was connected to smart meters, right? So in 2006, our appliances were connected to smart meters, right? So the transformation or what we thought would change there was we thought utilities would lead that charge, right? It was about saving energy. But obviously, you know, 2006 came. I'd say 2008 came, right? There was a crisis. Energy consumption dropped off. So then utilities didn't have this massive need for a change. So then we went in a different direction and we went to be smart appliances, right? But those things happened, right? Gradual change. So that's the incremental change you're talking about. We've been in this connected space since 2006, right? But we've had different forms and we've given out different features and functionality, so it's grown. And now it's not just the appliance, but it's the whole back end infrastructure that has been changing as well, right? So all that kind of comes together to provide different features, different functionality, and different innovations for our customers and owners. Type of change is hard, right? Especially when you spend several years building this infrastructure, right? To make such a drastic change at the time was very hard on the team. But at the end of the day, you know, we felt, hey, there's a lot of learnings that we had that we can move to the new space with. I mean, it would have been easy for, you know, the business to say, this failed with the utilities, right? Let's close up shop and, you know, and try something different, right? Or have everyone go back and make appliances. But instead it was, hey, there's a lot of good ideas. There's a lot of technology. You know, the ability to update the appliance was something that we were able to do at that stage in 2006. So we were able as a company to say, there's a lot of good innovation here. There's a lot of good things that we can make consumer facing where the consumer will gain a lot of benefit. So let's just change a little bit, right? Change our focus, change the objective, but use the innovation that we've built.
I would call that maybe taking a long view. And you brought up Uber as this disruptive force. And the reason why I mention it is, well, I agree with you 100% that transformation and change is kind of incremental. It happens over time. I think in some places, though, it does happen relatively quickly. The restaurant delivery market, that was a disruptive force, right? Similar to Uber, the Grubhubs, the DoorDashes. And there was somebody talking saying that those guys are already getting disrupted potentially because the business model doesn't necessarily fit. Yeah, everybody I've talked to you so far, you know, when they talk about change, they just about everybody uses the word hard, which it is. When you think about something being difficult and hard, how do you stay motivated? You know, how do you keep people motivated? And how do you yourself stay motivated?
Right. I mean, I think one of the things that you kind of touched on were it's still exciting and innovative projects that we're working on, right? So, you know, even though it's hard, even though it's a windy path, there's still at the end of the day, good solutions for consumers, right? That's what I think we're focused on. How do we deliver well-being, happiness to our consumers, right? To our owners at the end of the day, right? And we get to work on neat technology, and that's just a bonus. So I think that's really what motivates this team is the ability to work on, you know, cutting-edge technology for our industry in order to really see how it helps people.
I love that you mentioned that because that's honestly one of the things that just really excites me. I mean, there's very few jobs you can have in the world where you have the ability to affect so many lives, right, in a positive way. You know, a lot of people, myself included, you know, because I wasn't always a GE, worked jobs where you weren't sure what change maybe you were driving in the world. But here, you know, like you said, it's like, you know, we deliver, you know, happiness, well-being, people's homes. They rely on our products, and it's fun and exciting to try to find ways to make that better. You used a couple examples from the smart home days and its evolution in terms of a use case of change. But I'm curious, of maybe other use cases you've either studied or have seen, where you, either you thought that the outcome was surprising or maybe it was negative, despite the best efforts or best intentions?
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, negative. I mean, you've even talked about, and you know, your example today about food industry, right? The Grubhubs being disrupted already, right? Could you say that was a bad choice, right? But I think at the time it was the right choice. So, you know, even within, you know, I've worked at GE Appliances. I worked at GE for a long time. For some period of time, I worked in the GE, you know, research and development group out of Niskayuna, New York, right? And one of the things I'd always see is there were a lot of new technology, a lot of new initiatives. You know, some were successful, some were not successful, right? And at the end of the day, it could fail on two fronts. It would fail on the technology wasn't right. It could be too expensive. It could be too hard to manufacture. Or the commercial space just wasn't there. We didn't know how to commercialize that technology. So that's what I've seen more often than not, right, is the ability to take something new, some new innovation, but not able to explain to the end user or the consumer, you know, how does this benefit your life?
Did you feel like more often than not it was the inability to explain its value, or do you think that most of the time it actually was a, you know, solution looking for a problem where there maybe wasn't a need, or was it a 50-50? You know, you
yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's always one, it's hard to tell someone, you know, to have someone trust you to say, hey, here's your problem. You've told me this is your problem, and now here's my solution, right? Trust me. And then the other part is, you know, hey, look at this new innovation, right? You need to use it. And it's like, how do I use it? Where do I use it? Well, you know, just use it. We'll figure it out. So there's a little bit of both, I think.
And I think it's interesting also because I feel like in the smart home space, kind of so forward-leaning in a way, we're creating new experiences, right? What are your thoughts on that whole notion of, you know, where Steve Jobs would talk about, or I mean, he would basically borrow from Henry Ford, right? If I asked the customer what they want, they'd ask for a better horse.
Right.
What's your kind of thoughts on what we're doing relative to that?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because whenever I think about this question, I always go back to how did the car industry know I needed heated seats? Right. That's like, I think, oh, that's the greatest thing. But you could never ask a survey to a customer, right, and say, what do you want? Right. No one would really think of, I want heated seats. Right. But that was such a small thing that added so much pleasure. Right. And I think that's what we're trying to do with, you know, our connected smart appliances, right? Our smart home solutions group, right? Solutions is how do we solve problems? So one is, you know, consumers will tell us we have a problem and you create a solution. But what's even better is to delight people when they don't know that they really had this problem. And I think when you think of appliances and really connected or smart appliances, it's how do I delight you in those just minor instances, right? It's not, I'm going to create this grandiose experience, but hey, you know, if laundry is a chore to you, I'm going to make that chore a little easier. And it's going to, you're going to say, ah, yeah, that's what I needed. And then the incremental change is a little bit more, you know, ah, now my chore is very limited, right? So I want to give back to the consumer, to the owners, 5 minutes at a time, right? So, you know, one of the things I do every morning is I have kind of an egg sandwich. So I turn on the burner, right? It's an electric. I put the pan on there, and, you know, the pan is, you know, is a brand that's a connected pan. So it'll tell me when it reaches temperature, right? So before I had this pan, and since I'm not a great cook, right, the variation in my eggs was really when did I start cooking? The pan wasn't hot enough, or the pan was too hot, right? And then the eggs didn't come out great. But with this pan, it'll tell me when the temperature of that pan is correct for me to cook eggs. So that's great. I turn it on, wait for the notification. But while that notification, or while I'm waiting for that pan to get to the right temperature, you know, I can sit down and have a little coffee. You know, I'm not rushed. I can get everything that I need to prepare. You know, my bread's in the toaster. Everything that I put on my egg sandwich comes out. but now it just made my life a little bit easier because I don't have to guess and I'm not rushed. And that's a great way to start the morning.
You know, when I think about, you know, our property management customers or our B2B customers, you know, on the contract side, it's interesting because I think, you know, that analogy applies to them too, right? Where they're looking for ways to optimize their business all the time. I think what some of them may be starting to look at and starting to think about is how can they augment their operations today? What can they do differently? How can they look differently at how they run either their properties, their assisted living facilities, their student housing? How can they build their single family homes? What do you think is the best process for them to evaluate the right technologies? So maybe walk through, you know, your process for trying to make, you know, those trade-offs and those decisions.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a development perspective, right, you're probably trying to figure out, one, can I do it myself? Two, can I choose vendor A or can I choose vendor B? And what I always like to try to do is just weigh the benefits and the contrast to all three of those types of solutions, right, to then try to pick out which one is the best. Figure out what's most important to me about these three solutions. What can I live with? What can I live without? And then figure out who is best at what's most important to me. So that's what I try to do. And then, you know, you put it in a spreadsheet, you'll get a score. And then that really gives you kind of directionally which way you go. Then you do another maybe trial or you do some other types of investigation. Right. And then you do. Right. Then you go ahead and act upon it. So and then you try to make that solution the best solution. Right. It's always hard once you make a decision to go back on that decision. Right. It's always I've made the decision. I think I can make this work. And now let's work to do that. Right. So, I mean, we just talked recently. Right. About, you know, the OODA loop. Right. So that's really what you have to do. Right. Observe where you are. You know, pick a direction. You know, you act upon that direction and then you review it.
The process you just described, which I thought was like really, really cool and interesting, was first you try to at least gather as much information as you could to make a quality decision. And the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting about it, and I think this is a concept that Jeff Bezos applies as well as some others, which is this notion that your decision doesn't have to be kind of like an all or nothing kind of thing, right? You still leave yourself some optionality. It sounds like you actually go through a process of making a choice, testing, understanding, learning, and then seeing what you want to do from there. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I think that's a very good way to look at it. Right. I mean, in the software world, we do this thing called test-driven development, right? So the concept there is you have a feature or a hypothesis, and the first thing you want to do is test it, and then you know it fails, right? So you know it's different, you know it's new, you have a test, it fails. Then you figure out how to write the code that makes that test pass. Once the test passes, then you have to say, hey, I want to kind of optimize the code that I've written, and then you start over again. And that's really what you can do with decisions as well, right? You say, this is the choice I want to make. Here's my hypothesis. I get the information that I need. I start to develop the code, right? It should pass the criteria. And then I relook at it, right? I relook at it to either change what I've done, you know, to simplify or to move to another path, right? So I think that's always important, right? You want to make decisions and you want to be firm about your decisions, but you also want to be able to, you know, adapt, because one, the environment will change, or two, there's a better solution. So I know when we first started down the path in Connected, we had a gateway, right? Then we moved to Wi-Fi and we said, there's no need for a gateway, right? And sometimes we'll always joke to say there's no need for a gateway, right? It's funny. But as you know, it's been over 15 years, right? The environment has changed. The concept of edge computing, right? More computing at the home as opposed to the cloud. All these kind of things start to say, hey, wait a minute. We should relook at our concept of of a gateway, right? And it's not a gateway, it's an edge device, right, that has functionality of a gateway, but it's really the processing power in the home. So even though there was a decision made a long time ago, right, there comes a time when you have to reevaluate.
That's, I think, one of the interesting things about, you know, when you're in the industry so long, you know, the cycles, right? What is old is new becomes kind of a common concept. You know, for you, like, what tips or what suggestions do you have for people who are trying to drive change, or they're trying to do something different, and they, you know, they need to get buy-in, or they need to recruit others to help them?
Yeah, I think it's to be humble enough to know that maybe your idea is not perfect and your idea is not complete. I think communication is the key, right? As you want to bring people on board to your idea or to your change, you have to get people bought in. And the way to buy in is to first explain to them, understand what their ideas are to that concept, right? So, you know, and then it becomes theirs as well. So I don't ever want to go into a conversation with people saying this is the only answer there is. I always want to go into a conversation to say, here is kind of where we are with this solution. What do you think, right? How can we get your input to make this better? So I think even in this example, right, as we're looking at going into what we're calling multifamily space, right, or the builder channel, right, we're taking our expertise from a residential solution and presenting it to, you know, the owners of these multifamily or these hotels, motels, whatever the case may be. But we're taking this idea with some of our ideas to say this is what we think would be right for this space. But, you know, we want the input of that owner to say, yeah, I like this, but I also need this, right? So we want to make it very collaborative, right? I think that's the best way to approach this market and to get, you know, people excited about what are the solution possibilities that we can build together.
That's a really interesting point that you made, that both the, you know, the recruitment and the buy-in wasn't just an internal process, but it was also an external process that involved the customer.
It always makes sense to get the end user involved, right? Because I don't think, you know, you would use it this way, but not all people would use this device in a certain way, right? So it's always good to get that understanding to see how people, you know, use appliances, right? How do I cook? What's, you know, what do I do that may be quirky, but, oh, other people do it that way too. So there can be a solution around there, right? So I always think, you know, getting actual people who will use the product is important. You know, and in this case, you know, I think there are multiple people to consider, right? There's the renter or the end user that uses the appliance every day, but then there's the owner of the building that has a different need, right? I worry about, you know, energy cost. I worry about maintenance. You know, I worry about a catastrophic failure somewhere, you know, in that apartment. So those are different needs. And, you know, I may say, oh, if I was an owner, I would do it this way. But, you know, but I don't live it every day, right? So if I see how a person lives it every day, we can come up with different solutions.
Coming up on two last questions. I sent you questions earlier, but I'm going to change question number two. We're going to do a surprise question for question number two. First question is, in the next 2 or 3 years, you know, what are the innovative technologies that you're kind of keeping your eye on or really thinking about that can make an impact in the projects and programs that you're working on?
Sure. I mean, I think of three things. One is, you know, data analytics, right? How do we use the data that we're getting from our appliances to create better features, better user experience for our consumers? Kind of an extension to that is, you know, machine learning. How does the appliance itself adapt to the users of that appliance, right? So I think each, you know, the performance of each appliance can be enhanced once we understand how the owner uses that appliance. You know, and then thirdly, it's all really tied together, but sensor technology, right? Especially around cameras. So how can we get cameras within the appliance to help with groceries, deliveries, usage, less food spoilage, You know, then on the cooking side is, you know, we can do help with inventory because we know what was cooked. We can help with doneness. We can help with recipes. And you could even create experiences, right? If you have a camera and you're cooking, right, you can easily send that as a recipe, right, to someone else, right? And they can actually see you preparing your food and actually cooking your food, right? So I think there's, with camera technology and different sensors, there's just a whole array of features and opportunities we can enable to our consumers and owners.
So the second question, it's a tough question, John. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's go for it.
And you got to be honest.
Yeah.
There's people listening. What is your favorite appliance?
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, so when I worked at GE Appliances, I started off in refrigeration. So I have a sweet spot about refrigeration, you know, how it works, you know, how it keeps our food from spoiling. You know, there's just a lot of value I see in a refrigerator. But honestly, my favorite appliance is the cooktop. Right. I just think it's neat how it's set up, and it's the appliance that I'm learning to use more and more. So there's different features that I didn't even know were available, right? Different timers and things like that. So I can, and I'm starting to do it, right? I'm starting to create meals for the family. So I think it's just neat the way that appliance enables me to do something creative.
The built-in cooktop or just the cooktop in general?
Just the cooktop in general, okay. Really.
Yeah. I use the cooktop a lot as well, but that's just because I don't know how to bake anything. But
yeah,
but I agree. The cooktop is where the action's at. You know, you got to manage it. You got to supervise. You got to really be involved. John, thank you so much. Really love working with you. This has been great. Hopefully you had fun, and we'll have to do this again soon.
Yeah, definitely, Jeremy. This was fun. Thank you. And yes, definitely. Let's do this again.